You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome back in again to MLB.com Extras, the Seattle Mariners edition. I'm Dave Raymond with Greg Johns. And, well, Greg, here we are in the aftermath, I guess. You know, depends on who you talk to. It's either the aftermath or maybe the afterglow of the trade deadline. You know, the Mariners look a little bit different, I suppose. And in a lot of ways, I suppose you could say they look a lot the same.
Yeah, the results have been similar. They're still trying to, they're fighting that deal where they just can't get on a roll. You know, they won three games on their last road trip. Looked like they're ready to win four. And hard for me to believe. First time they would have won four games since early April. They had one four-game win streak all year, and they had a 5-3 lead in the ninth, looking to sweep the Rockies and kind of get some momentum going, and they blow the lead, lose that one, and kind of been back and forth since, and then just really haven't had that ability to kick in a good winning streak. But yeah, some new blood since the trade deadline, and most of it created from within. Brought up Ketel Marte, the young middle infielder, and they're working a little in center field as well. And boy, he's been leading off every game. Lloyd wants to see him in that leadoff spot and see what he can bring. And Jesus Montero, who to me one of the more interesting stories of this year, and hit the heck out of the ball in AAA, and they brought him up. He's hitting pretty well in the majors now. Pretty good comeback story here if he keeps going. So a couple things there. You know, they dealt some guys at the deadline, brought in some young talent that's mostly at the minor league level that they're going to build on. But that trade, probably the biggest one's moving Mark Lowe, and that's created a little more of a problem in the bullpen, which was already a problem. And that's one of the big reasons they really haven't kicked in a good win streak, because that bullpen just hasn't been solid. But yeah, a little different look with kind of the same spot in the standings.
Yeah, these types of seasons can be so frustrating. And I don't know why these types of things always are curiosities to me, but like, how's Lloyd McClendon doing? You know what I mean? I think that's the guy, you know, poor fella, he's got to wear it every night, you know, and he has to answer the questions every night. I sometimes feel for managers, especially in situations like this, where I think, you know, the expectations were this team was going to be good, and he believed it. I mean, I don't think he was faking it. He really felt like this was going to be a good year, and then you go through this. I just think it would be really tough on a guy.
Sure, it is hard, and it's one of the things when you cover a team, you get to know a manager pretty well, and that is the guy who you know, day in and day out has to stand up and talk and try to explain what's going on, and whether it's his fault or not, he's the one doing the talking. So, yeah, he's wearing it pretty well, I think. I mean, he's a guy that certainly has pushed hard. He's tried to push all the right buttons. Last year, all the buttons seemed to work. This year, maybe not quite so much. A lot of that's just a lot of it's the bullpen. Not to keep it all on them, but last year it seemed like everything he did in the bullpen worked, and this year just hasn't quite kicked in the same way. And lineup wise, he's pretty happy with the way the offense has come around the last 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, getting more of what he expected there. He's protective of his guys, but at the same time, he knows he's got to push, and he's pushing wherever he can. And I think he's as frustrated as anybody.
Hey, you know, you mentioned the offense, and this is one of those two, right? When you know, you never want to get too worked up about a stretch of, you know, a couple weeks or even a month in a major league season, because there's a lot of time, and doggone it, if things don't typically kind of even out or find their appropriate level. But I do feel like bad starts can be so hard to dig out of. And this team just, you know, offensively wasn't there. Robbie Cano just was doing nothing, it seemed like, forever. Now he's hot. Cruz was great at the beginning, you know, went through his little spell. You know, he's swinging a great bat again. But I hate to be this guy, Greg, but, I mean, where were you 3 months ago, Cano? I mean, where was this offense 3 months ago? Golly.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest conundrum on this team, I would think, is where that was for a couple months. And, you know, definitely good to see it coming around, because he's got 8 more years in that contract, and you sure want to see you want to see 8 years of struggles, that's for sure. Why he's been able to turn it on, it's been interesting. I don't know that it has anything to do with it, but they put him into the cleanup role a couple weeks ago, and since then he's been on fire. He's been driving in runs, and interestingly, when he's with the Yankees, numbers in the four spot were very good. His career OPS in the hidden cleanup is almost 100 points higher than anywhere else, and it's kind of an interesting thing. You know why that is? Who knows? A lot of times, you think you'd hit better if you're in front of a guy like Cruz instead of behind him, in theory. But he's done very well hitting in that spot, and it's kind of clicked into that with Seager hitting two. Cruz 3 and Cano 4, that's finally where they've kind of clicked in offensively, and Lloyd's definitely going to stick with that. He likes that setup to separate the two lefties with Cruz in the middle. And Cruz, coincidentally or not, since they put Cano in the cleanup spot, has gone on a 20-game hitting streak, hitting 415 with 12 bombs in the 20 games. So he's hitting pretty well in that 3 spot. So you kind of like what they're doing in the middle. That's kind of the recipe they had from the start of the season. On the offense, and here it is now in August, it's clicking in. So, yeah, that's part of the frustration where that was earlier, no doubt, but also part of the, I guess, hope that you're seeing something that really is what they want to build on that core down the road.
Right. I mean, there's no question, right? I mean, maybe at this point you can find that. Even if that's all you found this year, going into next year, you'd be a lot happier. And I've always been fascinated by lineup philosophies. You know, some hitters claim that none of it matters. Some guys really love hitting in front of or behind certain guys. It just that amazes me how you see trends, though, like Cano's numbers in the cleanup spot. But what about Edgar? It seems like some of the offensive turnaround has coincided with the change at hitting coach. Is it possible a hitting coach could make that kind of a difference?
Well, you'd love to think so, because that's something you could maintain, you can sustain over the course and build on. I think certainly Edgar deserves a lot of credit for his work with a couple of the young kids, Zanino and Miller, and seeing some results there. But maybe he's helped Cano too. You know, sometimes when Edgar signed on, Cano said, "Hey, this is the guy I got to listen to. He's played the game. Look at what he's done." I remember talking to Willie Blomquist. Said, "Hey, this is a guy that sometimes he'll just say one thing, and it kind of clicks in with you. And if one little thing clicks in with guys, and it adds up to a lot of big things, that's pretty good." Is it all about Edgar? I mean, they're hitting about 20 points higher and almost a full run more per game in the stretch since he's taken over. And it's not a small sample size now. It's building on 40, 50 games now. So, I'm not going to sit here and say it's all Edgar because, it's midsummer. They've had some trips to some hitter-friendly parks. And sometimes those numbers will go back down a little when you hit into the cooler months, especially in Safeco Field. So I'm not going to sit here and say, Edgar's flipped the switch and everything's great forever. But I do think he's got the ability and it certainly has come in with respect. And the guys, I mean, Edgar Martinez talks, people listen. There's no question when he talks hitting, they listen real careful.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. If I was Edgar's agent, I'd be saying it. and Edgar's not going to. But one of the things I like about the Mariners, though, they do a great job in kind of putting their arms around their superstars and their history, and they did another great job again. Jamie Moyer inducted into the Mariners Hall of Fame, and that one kind of cracks me up just because you could still put a uniform on him and he wouldn't look any different than he did 5 years ago. And I'm sure somebody probably asked him if he still could pitch while he was there. And I don't have any reason to believe that he couldn't still pitch the way he did his last probably 10, 15 years.
Well, that's funny, Dave, because he came out to Seattle. He's living in San Diego now. He came up for the Hall of Fame ceremony. And a big part of Jamie Moyer, if you know him, is the Moyer Foundation and the work he's done with kids at Camp Aaron. It's for a bereavement camp for kids who've lost a parent, and it's a huge thing with he and his wife, and they've done a great job with it. And he came up, they had a fundraiser the night before his Hall of Fame luncheon, and one of the fundraiser things they had was say you can get in a, give some money, get in a cage, and Jamie Moyer will pitch to you and take some swings. So he was throwing pitches in classic Moyer fashion the next day, said, "Hey, I felt like I could still do this." He said, "I felt like I was throwing 100 miles an hour because I never could throw 100 miles an hour." And he said, I felt fine. You know, my arm was good. He said, my hamstring was a little sore. And I'm thinking if I did this every fifth day, I'd probably be hurting. But that's my place. That's my sweet spot in life is being on a mound throwing. And 52 now, he does look like he could keep doing it. And, of course, if you've watched Jamie Moyer's career, you know that he lived off off his 80-mile-an-hour changeup and ability to locate. And if he could keep doing that, and shoot 3 years ago, he was doing it well enough to be pitching in the majors at 49. And that's really one of the more interesting stories, I think, in Major League Baseball history, a guy that won 276 games, I think it was, with the stuff he had. And certainly a great night. As you say, the Mariners do a wonderful job of bringing guys back in the history and the programs they put together, and it was a nice night out at Safeco Field.
That's good stuff, man. That is good stuff. And yes, I can totally see him making a pitch to get back in there. That's incredible. Well, listen, man, hang in there. Next week, I know we're going to be talking about the emergence of another young player and the continuation of this heart of the order to mash in the baseball. And who knows? Maybe there is still time left in this season, Greg.
You never do know, do you?
You never do. You never do. All right, there he goes. Greg Johns, MLB.com Extras, the Seattle Mariners edition.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.